Russia says it wants to secure the eastern and southern parts of Ukraine. Our reporter in Kyiv shares what's being seen on the ground.
They are trying to move forward from some areas in Kharkiv region, for example, Izum, which is now under their control, and they try to move forward to Kramatorsk.
Plus, the United Nations says there is growing evidence of war crimes in Ukraine.
The scale of summary executions of civilians in areas previously occupied by Russian forces are also emerging.
And later in the program, the long-term consequences for Ukrainians and especially for the many children that were uprooted when their families had to flee the fighting. Today is Friday, the 22nd of April. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. A Russian general declared on Friday that Moscow wants to seize all of southern and eastern Ukraine. That represents a far wider goal than it had acknowledged as it presses on with a new offensive after its campaign to capture the capital of Kyiv collapsed last month. Russia's defense ministry also said that it had struck 58 military targets in Ukraine overnight, including sites where troops, fuel depots, and military equipment were concentrated. As Ukraine prepares for the Orthodox Easter weekend, President Volodymyr Zelensky provided an update on the proposed holiday ceasefire by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Zelensky said that the Russians had rejected the proposal to establish the Easter ceasefire. U.S. Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby also told reporters on Friday that the Phoenix Ghost drones due to be delivered to Ukraine were previously under development, and that the decision to send them to Ukraine was based on information from Kyiv about the combat needs in the Donbas region sent by Kyiv. To learn more about where things stand on the ground in Ukraine, I caught up with reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
What we can definitely see that they are trying to move forward from some areas in Kharkiv region, for example, Izum, which is now under their control, and they try to move forward to Kramatorsk, up to Donbas region, so to close the circle, basically. And what we also clearly see is that all occupied areas are under very bad treatment in terms of civilians. So Russian forces are arresting civilians, those civilians who have any military experience, they are, they disappear and no one knows what's happening with them. We know that they are tortured and apparently some of them are killed. Also, the civilians are forced to move to Russia. So basically what we can see is that they're trying to clearing the territory and to find additional forces to the army.
Anna, I also wanted to ask you about the government's response to recent satellite imagery that seems to indicate the presence of mass graves outside of Mariupol. That's something that VOA has not been able to independently corroborate. But what has the government said about that?
Mariupol officials had a press conference where they confirmed that on the 29th of March, satellites, so it was spotted on the satellite that there is quite a long trench around 300 meters just at the outskirts of Mariupol, next to Mangush village. And as we see from that point on, this trench is getting bigger. So now it is 300 meters. And also was it confirmed that it seemed that this is already, so it's seen the movement around, and it's definitely, you can definitely see that the trench is already covered with land back. So apparently there are bodies inside. And also, this is what civilians also telling, that there are particular bases where Russian soldiers.
Anna Chernikova is reporting for VOA from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Reuters News says the Russian chief negotiator confirmed a news report that several long conversations took place on Friday with the head of Ukraine's delegation at peace talks between the two sides. Vladimir Medinsky gave no details about those conversations. And earlier this week, the Kremlin said Russia had submitted a new written proposal, but Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that he had neither seen nor heard about it. The war in Ukraine is also affecting those in the U.S. with families in Ukraine. Reuters reporter Gloria So brings us this story of a U.S. ballroom dance champion who hasn't heard from her mother in more than a month.
The last time Ukrainian-born U.S.-based dance champion Antonina Skobina spoke to her mother in Mariupol, she heard bombings and shootings over the phone.
The last conversation was that my mom said that the electricity has been cut off, heating has been cut off.
That was March 2nd, nearly 2 months ago. She says she hasn't heard from her family ever since.
And just not knowing what happened to my family, not knowing what is happening to my mother and what they're going through is... It's beyond painful.
Skobina says she used to speak to her mother every day, but that all changed after the Russian military invaded Ukraine on February 24th. The strategically located Mariupol became a hotspot of the conflict, and dead bodies can now be found all across the city.
In Mariupol, there is no cellular connection, so... people cannot also travel in between the neighborhoods. You know, it's not like you can just... walk to my mom's house and check if she's okay. People are scared to go out of their bomb shelters.
Skobina says her family wasn't able to evacuate the city due to her grandfather's poor health. She says a neighbor who did manage to evacuate had to break devastating news. Her grandfather had passed away in mid-March from lack of medication and was buried in front of his house.
At this point, I don't even have maybe tears left, even though I still feel them coming now. But I have been crying in the beginning, like, nonstop. And it's just a feeling of complete disbelief that this is happening. It's real physical pain, you know. It's not that your mind is just understanding what is happening. It feels like physical pain, like somebody's just stabbing your heart with a knife.
Skobina declined to give the names of her mother and grandparents, citing security fears. She says her only hope is that her mother and grandmother are still alive.
Every day I wake up, you know, and for just a few seconds I have this moment of... was it just a nightmare, you know, every single day? And then I just grab my phone and I understand, no, it's the reality.
Russia denies targeting civilians in its invasion of Ukraine, which it calls a special military operation to demilitarize and denazify the country.
Gloria So from Reuters News. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet says there is growing evidence of war crimes in Ukraine. Her office says that... She has been gathering evidence of indiscriminate shelling and other actions that may amount to war crimes. Lisa Schlein is up next.
The UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine has been gathering and documenting evidence of hundreds of alleged unlawful killings of civilians in Bucha and in towns in the regions of Kyiv, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, and Sumy. All of those places were under the control of Russian armed forces in late February and early March. UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says Russian armed forces have indiscriminately shelled and bombed populated areas. Her spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says they have killed civilians and wrecked hospitals, schools, and other civilian infrastructure, actions that may amount to war crimes. She says the monitoring mission has verified more than 5,260 civilian casualties, including 2,345 killed and 2,919 injured. Shamdasani says more than 92% of the casualties have been recorded in government-controlled territory and the rest in Russian-controlled regions of Donetsk and Luhansk in eastern Ukraine.
We know that the actual numbers are going to be much higher as the horrors inflicted in these areas of intense fighting, such as Mariupol, come to light. The scale of summary executions of civilians in areas previously occupied by Russian forces are also emerging. The preservation of evidence and the decent treatment of mortal remains must be ensured. as well as the psychological and other relief for victims and their relatives.
Shamdasani says the willful killing of protected people, including summary executions, are gross violations of international human rights law and serious violations of international humanitarian law and amount to war crimes. The monitoring mission also has documented what appears to be the use of cluster munitions by Ukrainian armed forces in the east of the country. Those weapons indiscriminately kill and maim civilians and are banned under international law. Shamdasani says the High Commissioner is calling for this senseless war to stop. Since the fighting shows no sign of abating, she says the High Commissioner is appealing to the parties to respect international humanitarian and human rights laws.
This means distinguishing between civilian and military objects. It means not targeting or deliberately killing civilians. It means not committing sexual violence. People, including prisoners of war, must not be tortured. Civilians, prisoners, and others hors de combat must be treated humanely.
High Commissioner Bachelet is calling on the parties to the conflict to investigate all breaches of international humanitarian law and to prosecute and hold perpetrators of crimes accountable. This in line with their obligations under what are defined as the rules of war. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
On Friday, it was also announced that the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres will visit Moscow on April 26th. That's where he will be having a working lunch and meeting with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and also be received by Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin has confirmed the meeting. We continue our coverage with Professor David Crane, the founder of the Global Accountability Network and former chief prosecutor of the Special Court for Sierra Leone, who held the rank of UN Undersecretary General. He discusses accusations of Russian war crimes in Ukraine with VOA Russian service reporter Danila Galparovich via Zoom and whether specific charges can be brought against Russia.
Well, as a international chief prosecutor of a war crimes tribunal, I can tell your listeners that Vladimir Putin and his commanders are committing war crimes. And we are gathering evidence to that, both the International Criminal Court, but also various organizations around the world, to include the Global Accountability Network, which I head, and it's just published a white paper on Russian war crimes. And we have found direct evidence, which is important in a court of law, that they are committing these crimes. And so Vladimir Putin will be indicted for international crimes sometime in the future.
Some countries, while acknowledging that Russian military is committing crimes in Ukraine, are cautious about Vladimir Putin's personal responsibility for these atrocities. What do you think about this?
Well, under the principle of command responsibility in the laws of armed conflict, Vladimir Putin is the constitutional head of the armed forces of the Russian Federation. And so he's in command of those forces, just like the American president is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States. And so he is individually criminally responsible for the acts of his forces that are committing barbaric acts in Ukraine. And so it's as if he committed each and every one of those acts himself. I did this in West Africa when I took down the only other sitting head of state in history, President Charles Taylor of Liberia, for war crimes and crimes against humanity, similar to what Vladimir Putin has done. So that's what I say clearly to your listeners, that Vladimir Putin is a war criminal, and he will be indicted for those acts along with his other commanders for war crimes, crimes against humanity, aggression, and potentially incitement to genocide.
So even if he didn't know about specific crimes, he should have known because he is a commander-in-chief.
Well, that's precisely what the definition is. Commander knew or should have known that his troops are committing war crimes and does nothing to correct it, then he is committing the war crime as if he was that soldier.
There is news from Moscow that those units of the Russian army that were located in the Ukrainian Bucha near Kyiv and apparently were involved in the atrocities that were committed there Putin appropriated them the elite name guards. Does it somehow protect the soldiers from liability?
No, in fact, it really is a major problem for him in a court of law. I call that aggravating evidence. It is further proof that he knows, and it's further proof that he is disregarding the law. So when I saw that, I thought to myself, I would take that into court and use that against him, and it would be very, very serious to him for awarding those medals to the individuals who committed atrocities in Bucha.
How can the international community ensure that those responsible for war crimes in this war will be held accountable, given that Russia retains its position as a permanent member of the UN Security Council?
Well, one is that the International Criminal Court, my friend Karim Khan, has started a preliminary investigation already. So he will conclude, and he's already said that Ukraine is a crime scene. So he will come to the appropriate decision using his procedures as that he has sufficient evidence to indict Vladimir Putin for war crimes and crimes against humanity. By an interesting twist of legal procedure, he does not have jurisdiction over the crime of aggression. And so the United Nations, using the General Assembly and ignoring the Security Council, can create what I would call a special court for Ukraine, where with the consent of and working with the Republic of Ukraine, create a court that would prosecute Putin and his commanders for the crime of aggression. And they would, once they were stood up, then they would begin the investigation and indict Putin and his commanders for the crime of aggression. So again, these are all beginning. There's a lot of work being done, but certainly I can assure you, your listeners, that he will be indicted because the International Criminal Court, a court of proper jurisdiction over this matter, will at the appropriate time indict him for that.
David Crane is the founder of the Global Accountability Network, as well as the former chief prosecutor of the Special Court for Sierra Leone. He was speaking with VOA Russian service reporter Danila Gaparovich, and Russia has also previously denied targeting civilians. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Explosions, death, displacement, and fear. The Russian invasion of Ukraine will have long-term consequences for Ukrainians and especially for the many children that were uprooted when their families had to flee the fighting. VOA's Celia Mendoza has more.
Innocent Ukrainian children play in refugee centers far from home. At a tender age, they have heard and felt the sounds of a war they can't yet understand.
I heard a lot of explosions. It was difficult to go by train. We heard sirens and problems. I am very scared. I want to tell everyone that it's better to stay at home or go to the basement.
Uprooted from their homes, these children feel safe in Poland. Jon Masim, who is from Odessa, is aware of why they had to flee.
On February 24th, I heard three explosions and we had an air alarm, and then the normal one. After a week, two, or three, they started bombing again. It's been about 3 days, two, I don't know. Then we all stocked up on food and water.
As children arrive at the Polish border, some are carrying emotional scars over what they have seen and lived through.
In some places, they fire a lot of rockets. The planes flew over us. In our region, they shot down a plane and everything. And in the other regions, tanks were coming. They were shelling buildings.
While it might be difficult for younger children to express themselves, some wishfully share their loss.
I left a cat in Ukraine. Also, my grandparents stay there. I went to music school, played basketball. I could play the piano. I am talented.
Some look forward to a new future in another country. Others yearn to return home.
I want to go back home. That's where my cat Vashinka and my dogs are. They miss me there. But our path turned out to be very difficult.
Seemingly wise beyond his years, Maxim has developed a sense of patriotism caused by the Russian invasion.
I want to be a military man because I want to protect our land.
The destruction and ordeal that children like Maxim have endured, along with their parents, are likely to shape their lives forever. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, Chemish, Poland.
As jazz dancers in Ukraine lay aside their costumes to become soldiers or even volunteers, the dance community in the Washington area is trying its best to support their counterparts overseas by organizing charity dance parties to raise funds and help Ukraine. Anna Rice rounds us out.
This is Zhenya Tsvetkova, a swing dance teacher in Kyiv. Dozens of students, dance parties, and beautiful video clips. That's what her life used to be before the war in Ukraine. She doesn't dance anymore. She says she can't even listen to music. Since the war began, Zhenya has been volunteering to do what she can to help.
It was hard to make sense of what was going on. Anything. When someone just tells you at 6 in the morning, war has started. At first, we would post online asking around what people needed. Many people stayed behind. Parents, friends, acquaintances. I realized I could buy groceries, eggs, milk, bread, and deliver to different people around the city.
Kyiv native Zhenya Nagorny also used to dance swing before Russia's invasion. But on February 24th, he swapped his dance costume for soldier's camouflage.
On the second day of the war, I went to the territorial defense, but they told me they had no openings. I live on the left side of the river in Kyiv, so I decided to cross the river and ask over there. I love my country very much, and I don't want it to turn into some sort of an appendix for Russia.
American swing dancers may not know their Ukrainian counterparts personally, but they share the common language of dance, a bond that brings them together, though they are half a world apart. That inspired the Americans to use dance to raise funds for Ukraine.
The swing dance community in Ukraine is so strong, and it's swing dance is a universal language all over the world, and so our brothers and sisters in Ukraine need us. We had a lot of people asking, so the tickets were hot items. Everybody was contacting me all last night and today, asking if they could come.
The dress code is simple, blue and yellow, the colors of the Ukrainian flag. Men approach the requirements with all seriousness.
Oh, I've had the yellow one for a while, and I just added the blue shirt. My wife got me blue socks and a blue shirt. I come almost every time there's a dance here, and this is a special fundraiser for Ukraine.
In addition to rock and roll, traditional Ukrainian music was played at the party, and some traditional Ukrainian songs were sung. Anyone could donate, both online and at the party.
These stickers will go to anybody who donates. If you donate $25 or more, you get a flag. If you donate $50 or more, you get a vinyl sticker.
During the party, the dancers raised more than $5,000. They say all the funds will go directly to the Ukrainian army. And Kyiv natives Zhenya Tsvetkova and Zhenya Nagorny are confident. Once the war is over, they will start dancing again. For Lesya Bakalets in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage on Ukraine and news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of our entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Washington, Papa Bozet, D.C.